Hey, everybody, welcome back to Two Geeks at the Movies. I am your co-host, Chris, and as always, I'm joined by my brother and co-host, Rob. What's up, boy?
Not much. How you doing, you old so-and-so?
you sweet little thing. Son of a bitch. We are going to talk about Bad Times at the El Royale today. That's a movie that came out last year.
It sure did.
Directed. Did you see it in the theater?
No, I did not. It was a movie. I feel like maybe I talked about it in our year-end one as being like the one movie that I was bummed out I didn't get to see. But
yeah, I know it was on my list of ones that I had wished I saw and wanted to catch up on.
So it's directed by – one of the big reasons I wanted to see it was it's directed by Drew Goddard, who did Cabin in the Woods, which is one of my favorites, and he hadn't made a movie since then. So it had been – I don't know how many years.
He was – correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was the showrunner or creator for Daredevil on – Netflix.
Yeah.
At least. And so he was probably tied to that for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he might have been like executive producing after that or something. But
yeah, he's done stuff. I know he's directed some of the. Is it The Good Place?
Yes, he has. And I think he's a producer on that as well.
So it's not like he's been sitting on his laurels. He's been doing stuff. But movie wise, yeah, this is his first, at least directorial one. I know he wrote a few. I think he wrote The Martian and maybe one or two others. But yeah, that coupled with just the cast and the trailer and the music, I was super pumped to see it. And so I'm glad I got to catch up with it because I really, really like this one.
Yeah, I had the same feeling. I really have enjoyed him. And I was when I realized that this was only the second movie that he made, I was really surprised at first. And then I thought, well, nobody really saw Cabin in the Woods outside of like horror fanatics and movie geeks like us, so I guess it's not terribly shocking, although it was well received and I think it got some well-deserved critical praise. I definitely think Cabin in the Woods needs to be seen by more people, because it is so bonkers and fantastic. But
although I will say, so I watched this movie with Mo and she really enjoyed it. But, and I may have told this story, but I remember seeing Cabin in the Woods with her in the movie theater. And I was at the end of it. I was so focused on it the whole time. And I turned to her thinking like, oh man, she must have loved this too. And she was so annoyed. She was not thrilled with the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see somebody not liking it easily. Because it's takes things in such a way that you're not prepared for.
It wasn't even that. She focused so much on the pothead character, and she just hated that character so much.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's just being a jerk.
She's a jerk.
Oh, Mo.
Anyway, I derailed us, but what did you think of this movie?
I was extremely captivated by it for the first half.
Okay.
I enjoyed it for the second half, but I was frustrated by it. And I was frustrated because I feel like it didn't really deliver on its premise. And we can talk more about that as we go here. But what did you think?
I'm with you. I think it was entertaining the whole way through. I agree that the first half is a little bit stronger and that it fumbles a little bit, especially in the last, like, 5 or 10 minutes, it becomes something I wasn't expecting, but not in a good way.
Okay.
It kind of, I don't even want to get into it just yet before we do spoilers, but overall, I think it's a pretty damn good movie. Visually, it's amazing. Like I mentioned, the soundtrack is fantastic. The cast is all top notch. And Cynthia Erivo, who plays Darlene, the singer,
man, she was good.
Is awesome. Like, she's just a good actress. I had never seen her in anything, and her singing voice is astounding. So,
she has a smaller part in Widows, which I have just railed against, although she was one of the few highlights of that movie. Like, she's not given anything to do, but you can tell even in that movie that there's something real special with her. And she is unbelievable in this movie.
It's a reason for people to see this movie, just to see her.
Yeah.
I wish more people had, because I don't think this did well, which isn't surprising. It just doesn't seem like a movie that would do well. But just because I feel like she could do, like, she could go on to do a lot of great stuff. But I just don't know if she has enough exposure yet.
Yeah, I hope she gets the chance, because she's very, very talented. And it's amazing in a cast like this with so many big names and big personalities to kind of steal the show, pull the rug out from under all of them is impressive.
For sure. Mm-hmm. I almost rented Widows the other day, and I stood at the Redbox for a good, like, 49 minutes. I want to check this out, but I heard your nasty little voice in the back of my head going, don't do it. Don't do it.
Oh, man. That 49 minutes wasted was saved you 2 hours of pain. Well, should we jump right into spoilers? Because we're going to crank through this thing.
Yeah, let's crank one off here.
Okay, so spoilers for Bad Times at the El Royale. If you haven't seen it, I would, even though I'm a little rough on it, I would definitely recommend watching it. It's very worth watching. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So that opening scene.
Yes.
That is a man going into, we know nothing. It's a man going into a hotel room. Basically peeling back the carpet, digging up the floor, and hiding something underneath the floor.
Yes.
It took me about a minute, but did you realize who it was at first?
As I was watching it, I thought it kind of looked like him.
Okay.
But I didn't think too much about it. I couldn't tell for sure. I was watching it, unfortunately, on an iPad. Ah. So it was very small and not very detailed. But it was Nick Offerman, right?
Yeah. Well, because he appears later... in a flashback, but even in another flashback.
But even in the scene that he appears, isn't he wearing a mask the whole time?
I think he is, but you at least hear his voice.
You can hear his voice, yeah.
That's 100% him. So I thought that was fun, just because I love that guy.
He and his wife, Megan Mullally, I just saw them on TV the other night in a commercial for, I think it's Slingbox, which is something where you can broadcast your television to your computer. Anyway, look up the commercial of these two, because it's hilarious.
Okay.
It's very worth watching. So
their scenes together in Parks and Rec are amazing.
Yeah. Just, they're unbelievable.
I feel like she's nude at least from the waist down in 90% of them.
They're so funny.
Anyway, Nick Offerman is in this movie for about a minute and a half.
But it's a really interesting setup. It's the whole movie reminds me of Drew Goddard trying to do Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
Semi-successfully. I think the dialogue is interesting. I think the characters are interesting. It reminds me a little bit of The Hateful Eight in the way that it's sort of, you know, a bunch of strangers coming together at what is essentially a hotel.
It's a little claustrophobic.
Yeah. I guess my issue with it overall is that there's a lot of big ideas and it doesn't come together really well. And maybe it was just what I brought to it, sort of expecting – anytime I see a movie like this where there's a bunch of different strangers that come together and they seemingly should be interconnected, but they really weren't. And it, you know, I kind of expected each of them to be there trying to do something about whatever the money that was hidden in the floor. you know, they set that up as sort of the driving force of the movie. And so you expect everybody is either looking for the money for themselves, or if they're policemen, they're setting up a sting to record it, or there's some reason that all these people are here on this particular night, but they're all just sort of there by happenstance. And I find that a little less interesting than the alternative.
Yeah, and I see what you're saying, but I almost feel like that wouldn't be the easy way out, but to me it was almost more interesting that they did it this way, just because you don't typically see something where it is just like all these random people and just all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
So it is a bit of a coincidence, but I feel like each different conflict and each different person brings something different to the table, as opposed to just, you know, it's a mad, mad world where everyone's trying to get the same thing.
And I can respect that too. But again, it goes back to this idea for me that, it, like, what are the chances that, how many years later was it that that Jeff Bridges came back trying to find the money? Like 10 years later?
Mm-hmm.
So on the same night that he happens to finally show up to get this money, there just happens to be an FBI agent secretly staying in the hotel where people are secretly videotaping people in their rooms, and there just happens to be a woman who's trying to smuggle her sister out of a cult, and the cult leader happens to find them at that hotel. And it was just like, it's so insanely coincidental that all these huge events for all these like five or six people happen at the same time on the same night in the same place. And that's what bugs me. Again, I know it's more cliched for them all to be interconnected somehow and all their stories have a common thread, but I'd rather have it be cliched in that fact than to have to swallow the idea that all these coincidences just happened at the same time.
Okay, fair enough.
And that was one of my main things. And I don't know. It certainly doesn't ruin the movie for me. It just, I kept waiting for some common thread to appear and it never did.
I sort of, and maybe like you said, it's what you brought to the movie.
Because oh, yeah.
I wasn't really expecting that.
Okay.
I don't know why. Maybe because I'm an idiot. but maybe that's why it sounds like I enjoyed it a little more than you, because I had no issue with that. I just sort of was along for the ride, and I was like, sure, this is movie land. This crap can happen.
Yeah.
I took more issue with the ending.
Okay.
I don't know if you want to talk about that now, or should we talk maybe about the characters and the actors in it first?
Yeah, let's do that.
So obviously we got Jeff Bridges, who plays Nick Offerman's partner, who, like you said, years ago, I forget what they did. Did they? I haven't seen that in a few weeks.
I think they robbed an armored car.
Armored car, and they took off in different directions and said they'd meet up at the El Royale. Doesn't Jeff Bridges get nabbed by the cops?
Yeah, Jeff Bridges gets caught and goes to jail. Nick Offerman gets
killed,
takes the money, hides it, and then gets killed. Wasn't there a third guy?
I can't remember. Maybe yeah, he's the one who kills him, but
yeah,
then he can't find the money because he's completely covered it up.
And I like that he's masquerading as a priest.
Yeah.
And they get a lot of mileage out of that as an idea, which I really enjoyed, sort of people treating him a little different. And then the sort of the surprise when she hits him with that bottle.
Yeah, that was good. There was a lot of good surprises.
Uh-huh.
And even,
John Hamm. Oh.
I was just going to say there's the shot of her high heels just sitting there.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that and being like, what the hell? And then I started to think about it. I go, oh, I see what they did there. John Hamm plays who we think is it a vacuum salesman?
Right.
But ends up being an FBI agent. Is that right?
Yeah. And I can't remember what he's, who he's looking for.
He's there.
Is he investigating the hotel?
I can't remember. Yeah. I know he's either setting up. Oh no, he's setting up surveillance, right? And right. then he discovers that somebody has already done it, and that's when we find out that the hotel's got some shady secrets going on.
Yeah, and I didn't really understand what the point of that was.
What the point of what was?
They never really understood a lot about why the hotel was videotaping people. I know they were blackmailing people.
Yeah.
But again, just there was a lot about the hotel, and they made a big deal about the hotel is on the border of California and Nevada. And again, I thought there might be something interesting about that. There really wasn't.
I think that was more just for the aesthetics of the movie and the visuals. And I don't know, maybe there's something about the duality of people. I mean, now that I'm thinking about it, you have Jeff Bridges' character who's,
that's true.
Like you said, masquerading as a priest. There's, I forget the name of the bellhop. He's not really a bellhop, but the guy working at the front desk. And his whole deal. So everyone's got everyone has their secrets.
Yeah, that's true. John Hamm is kind of masquerading as a vacuum cleaner salesman, but is FBI. And there's a lot about redemption in it. Mm-hmm. Which I think is more, it's got kind of what you're getting at, that the ending was more saccharine than maybe you would have thought it would be.
That was one of my issues, is, I want to say his name is Miles, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So Miles, who plays, up his name, Lewis Pullman plays the character.
Okay.
And he was really good too. He plays kind of he's a little squirrely guy. He's very nervous, and yet he's done some horrible things in his life. But it's revealed later on that he was in Vietnam. Is that right?
Yes.
And he ends up kind of saving the day, killing Chris Hemsworth at the end. Mm-hmm. And then Jeff Bridges, as a priest, quote unquote, forgives him and gives the kid some peace as he dies. But Miles' story takes such a quick turnaround and happens right at the end, and Vietnam reveal is so quick that it doesn't have enough weight, because it doesn't have enough time to kind of sink in with you to have any sort of emotional connection. So that was maybe my biggest issue with the movie. And so leaving more or less on that note, I thought was a little bit, I don't want to say lame, but it was just sort of a letdown. Because minutes earlier, this kid is talking about watching men fucking wolves and people committing suicide and a politician beating up a prostitute or something like that. I'm forgetting some of it a bit, but and you're kind of like, wow, this guy is sort of a piece of shit here.
Well, but I never felt like they never tried to pin it on him as much. Mm-hmm. Like, he was working for whoever ran the hotel and had him doing that. And I got a sense throughout it that he had some innocence to him and didn't really enjoy what he was being made to do.
But he was still doing it.
Oh, yeah, he was.
He could have gone and worked it in and out or something.
Now, Jeff Bridges kind of has a turn at the end, along with the singer. What's her name?
Darlene.
Darlene
is the character.
And I thought they, I wouldn't say they betrayed her character, but she had worked so hard to overcome racism and sexism and try to make it with her singing, that the idea of her taking the money didn't sit right with me. She seemed like more of an honorable character. Even at the end, they tried to make this like she was sort of heroic in her in what she did. And in the end, I feel like I didn't buy that she would go along with that. Even though there was desperation in her character, it just didn't seem right.
didn't bother me as much at the time, but now it is.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just because I had seen her go through so much shit, even whether it's in her flashbacks or during this, where she's basically almost drugged and attempted murder against her, and like all this stuff, that I was like, you know what, you've earned it. Go ahead. And it's not like she wound up on like a beach somewhere, you know,
sipping. She got to be cocktails. A singer. And,
she was just like, I got some money, I'll go be a lounge singer. Mm-hmm.
But I did like her and Jeff Bridges together, particularly.
Yeah.
Dakota Johnson was pretty good in this.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that softcore pornography she made, so I haven't really seen her in anything else.
I have. You're talking 50 Shades of Grey?
50 Shades of Grey, yeah.
It's not quite softcore. Can I tell you something about that movie?
Please do.
Kind of boring.
Oh, I would imagine.
Yeah.
You know, in this day and age of the internet where you can see whatever you want to see, I don't think a movie like that, like when we were young and you had things like Basic Instinct.
Yeah.
Like, you did. You there? What, that shit wasn't on the internet. There was no internet. You know, seeing Sharon Stone's beeve was like high times for a young man. Now we're so dull to
include in a movie.
It's so strange. Which I just saw the Simpsons episode the other day where Groundskeeper Willie does that. I freaking love it.
Don't they pull a gun on him?
Yeah. We warned you about that.
No, it's more boring in the sense that Mo and I sat down to watch it thinking, like, this will be pretty hilarious. Like, this has to be pretty terrible. And it was, but like half an hour in, we were like, this is just sort of boring. Like, it wasn't even fun.
Oh, well, I'm glad I never get drug into that.
Yeah. But she was fine in this.
She was fine.
And I would like to see Suspiria.
Yeah.
Which came out this past year. But I think it's like 2.5 or more hours long. And I'm like, oh, man, that's going to be hard to get to.
Yeah. Chris Hemsworth is charming and fun, as he always is. Sort of a fancy Charles Manson character.
I was going to say he's like the most beautiful Charles Manson you could ever think of.
Right. And he was interesting. I think he was somewhat underutilized, maybe underwritten. Mm-hmm. Just the rest of the characters were a lot stronger, but he still, you buy what he's up to as this cult leader.
Yeah, I think he's basically convinced himself that he's a god, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, he's just gone totally nuts. Uh-huh. But I don't know. I felt like he was genuinely, like, a scary villain. Like, some villains are just kind of a dime a dozen, but you sort of bought into how insane he was, and the fact that he just will, I forget who he shoots right away. Is it Dakota Johnson?
I think so.
And you're just not expecting it, and you go, holy shit.
He was introduced a little late in the movie than I thought, and maybe that's why I didn't connect with him as much, but he was good.
Yeah.
So the bellhop kid, whatever his name was.
Yeah, Miles.
Did he remind you of any other actor? Just the look of him? I don't know if you...
No. Who are you thinking?
Because when I first saw him, I was like, is that Tom Holland? Little Spider-Man?
A little bit.
And then I read, and it was bothering me the whole time, and then I read later that Tom Holland turned down a role in this movie.
Oh, really?
And I assumed that was the role.
Yeah.
But okay. But yeah, because I was just like, oh, he looks just like him. So
I really liked him. I thought he was pretty great.
Yeah, he was good. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. It's really worth watching. I mean, you should. It's the kind of movie that you need to see and make your own judgments about it, because it's very entertaining. You won't be sad that you watched it. I would hope not, but
I would say even just taking away some of the story and some of the issues that you and I had with it, I think the dialogue is pretty good. I think the characters and the actors are good.
Yeah.
The music and the visuals, I think, are all worth checking it out for. If you got 2 hours on your plate, I'd say go for it.
Again, I didn't love it as much as I wanted to, but I would 100% watch it again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I feel like knowing what I know now, I might like it a little bit more going in.
That's a good point. I might too.
Also, just knowing that John Hamm doesn't survive for very long, I might enjoy it more, because when he went, I was like, oh, damn it.
Yeah, I agree.
Cause
I
he love was,
John Hamm.
In his one big scene where they're in the lobby, he was cracking me up. Just like such a hilarious douchebag.
He's so great.
Yeah.
It's amazing to me, he and Chris Hemsworth, if you really think about where they both started in sort of dramatic roles, how funny those two guys are.
Yeah.
Like, they should just be in nothing but comedies from here on out. In fact, those two need to do a buddy comedy. Oh,
I would watch that a million times.
It'd be great. So, all right, well, on that note, why don't we wrap it up?
Okay.
Rob, if anybody's looking for us online, where can they do it?
At twogeeksatthemovies.blogspot.com. We're on Facebook. We are on Stitcher, Podomatic, and the iTunes Store, and on Facebook at Two Geeks Movies.
All right. Very good. Well, thank you for joining us, and we will catch you next week on Two Geeks at the Movies.
See ya, suckers.
See ya.